It's the My Michelle Live podcast.
My Michelle Live, Sci Tech Talk, taking the God story to a geeky place. Here's Michelle.
Hey, so glad to have you with us today. I am Michelle Mendoza, and this is the My Michelle Live podcast. Today is Sci Tech Talk. This is about where we're going to get kind of geeky, but reveal something, in my humble opinion, so profoundly interesting, it will rock your world. The more we delve into studying the earth, the moon, the stars, nature, the more we delve into, dare I say, studying creation, and the more we learn, the more it tells us, I believe, about the God story. And that's what we're going to be taking on today. Now, here's something you may not know about your home. Your home here on earth is comprised of very interesting things. Astronomers have discovered anomalous properties of the solar system and how they reveal something so fascinating. It's like mind blown. We're going to be looking into our solar system, your planet Earth, your home, what it is made of, and how likely you think you might be able to find, your summer getaway in another solar system. And what does that reveal about the God story? We have with us a gentleman that I have to tell you has been a joy to me for years. We've recently connected on Zoom, so now I get to see my friend Hugh face to face. He's an astronomer, founder, and president of Reasons to Believe. He's the author of many spectacular books that take very heady, interesting discoveries of recent times and makes it really palatable, easy to understand, and relatable for people like you and I. He is the one and only Hugh Ross. Hello, Hugh.
Hey, good to talk to you.
You as well. I'm really fascinated by this topic today, because as we talk about our little rocky planet, and we delve into more science fiction than we probably have in years because of lockdown, we're all binge watching. You know, there's so many movies about finding a new Earth, exploring for that new Earth. What we don't understand is whether we can find a planet even partially or kind of habitable. What we have here is brilliantly unique. And what formed our home, a lot of folks don't know.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we astronomers have actually now found 4,760 planets beyond our solar system. And a lot of those are rocky planets. But now they've got a fairly large catalog of these extrasolar rocky planets, and none of them are like the rocky planets in our solar system. I mean, typically what we see is that they're orbiting very close to their host stars, they're smaller, and they're not as dense. And in particular, what we see is that the farther away a rocky planet is, the less dense it is. And you actually see that working in our own solar system. I mean, it makes sense. The farther away you are from your host star, the less gas is going to be blown off by the heat of the star. So we would anticipate that you would get a dropping density. You see that with Mercury, with Venus, and Mars. The Earth is the exception. The Earth is the densest planet in the solar system, and yet look how far away it orbits from our host star. Now, that's because our Earth didn't form the way other planets form. It formed as a result of a merger between two planets. So our solar system began with five rocky planets, two that merged together to make the Earth, and it also spawned the moon. We wouldn't have the moon without that merger event.
So this is crucial. This is something that maybe I didn't learn back when I was taking science in school, that the idea is that there was another planet Theia. There was also, which was a rocky planet. There was also another gaseous planet that remains unnamed. Let's call it Hugh. So we'll just name it after you. So there was a gassy planet Hugh. There was a rocky planet Theia that was also part of our solar system way back when that helped form us.
I'm not too excited about a gassy planet being named that.
Sorry, the rocky one was taken. I did the best I could.
All right.
It's amazing how this formed Earth and our moon, Theia, with some kind of merger, some kind of collision. And is that what we believe has caused the unique density of our planet?
Well, that and another factor, because all of our solar system rocky planets are much denser than what we see in other extraplanetary systems. They're all super dense, but the Earth is the most dense of all. And it's because of the way the sun formed its rocky planets that we see this unique feature. Because for a long time, astronomers have been puzzled by our sun. It's not like any other star that we see. What we notice is that it has a very low lithium abundance and a very low abundance, what we call refractory elements. These are elements that don't show up as a gas or liquid. They're always solid, even at relatively high temperatures. And our rocky planets are super abundant in those refractory elements. The sun is super underabundant in those elements. And super underabundant in lithium. It's extremely stable. There's no star as stable as the sun. It's got a luminosity stability 5 times better than any other known star. And so it's just recently astronomers have figured out how to explain all this. Something happened in the early sun's history where it transferred a lot of its heavy elements out to its rocky planets, and also transferred a lot of its angular momentum because its rotation rate is also anomalous. And that transfer of angular momentum explains why our rocky planets orbit so distantly from the sun, unlike what we see with other extraplanetary systems. But notice, all those features are crucial to have life existing in our solar system. If our rocky planets were orbiting closer to the host star, there'd be no possibility for life. If they didn't have this superabundance of refractory elements, there'd be no possibility for advanced life, at least. And also, you'd be stuck with a lot of water. And also, you get a lot of mass. If you add up the mass of all of our solar system planets, the rocky planets, it's much higher than we see any other extrasolar planetary system. So it's like all these are features that are crucial for life, and we only see it in one planetary system.
Wow. I am amazed at the, not just the complexity, Hugh, but the fine balance of what's created what we have here on planet Earth. And of these, I think you said something like 4,700 exoplanets that we have now discovered, which to me, it just screams of extraordinary technology to be able to look beyond our solar system to find these exoplanets. But of these nearly 5,000 exoplanets, we have seen nothing like our sun and nothing like our Earth. How far do you think we'd have to look statistically, mathematically, before we find something that is a little more Earth-like?
Well, it's all the way back in 1995 that astronomers discovered the first planet orbiting a nuclear burning star. And at that time, they're predicting we're going to find all kinds of planets just like the planets in the solar system. Well, here we are, 4,760 discovered planets. Not a single one is like any of the planets in our solar system. We haven't found a match to any of the 8. And that led to an amazing discovery. Each one of the 8 planets in our solar system plays a crucial role in making advanced life possible on planet Earth.
Whoa, right there. Wow. Wow.
So like when we have Thanksgiving dinner, we thank God for Uranus. We thank God for Neptune, for Mars, for the whole lot, because there'd be no dinner if it wasn't for all those eight planets being exactly the way they are.
Spoken like an astronomer, spoken like an astronomer. I completely get you. That what's amazing. I think I've talked about this with your colleague, Dr. Rana, where we've talked about our bodies and how they're fearfully, wonderfully made, how we used to, you know, back in the day, Hugh, everyone in my age group was getting their tonsils out. It was just routine. And my mom said, "You're not getting your tonsils out. God put them there for a reason." Well, no. They're just left over from evolution. They're completely useless. There's no reason for tonsils. While all the other kids were eating flipping ice cream and getting to stay home from school, I was sitting there, "I don't get my tonsils out." Well, as it turns out now, your tonsils are actually useful for filtering infection and other things that we found. The science and the brilliant minds of the day got it wrong. That's why science, my friends, is never settled. Always got to challenge it. But Hugh, it sounds like some of these planets, even exoplanets and all of the things in the solar system and universe they're like tonsils. We just didn't know we really need them.
Yeah, we really do. I mean, for example, we need the four gas giants, where the biggest one is the one that's closest to us. The next biggest one's closest to us. We need them to be exactly the mass and the orbital features that they have in order to ensure we get the just right delivery of comets and asteroids. It's important that we get some delivery, but it's also important we don't get too much. You don't want a giant asteroid crashing into Seattle every week.
So, there are days. There are days.
There's a shield. But it's a perfect shield. It's a perfectly designed shield. On the other hand, those four gas giants also generate what are called mean motion resonances, which over time would disturb the orbits of the small rocky planets. But the way the small rocky planets are orbiting, they break up the mean motion resonances. So everything is just right.
If I were to just look
Even
at
the
this...
The moon plays a role in breaking up those resonances.
Oh, does it?
Yeah, so we need the moon to be just the mass that it is, just the right distance from the Earth to make it all work. As we talked before, we need the moon to be orbiting away from the Earth at a certain rate. Otherwise, no possibility for life at all on planet Earth.
Okay, Hugh, here's something that I really want to point out. As you're listening to Hugh and I talk today, this bit of information, the density, the placement, the balance, that's pretty extraordinary. So the miracle of life in this story is so apparent. Wow, the chances of that happening, wow, just right so that we can have life on Earth, that's extraordinary. But to me, it doesn't alone speak of the God story. I mean, it does, but I think there's room for argument to say, well, yeah, the chances are pretty minute, but what if it did happen? I say that because, Hugh, it's not just the placement of the planets. It's not just the balance of gaseous versus rocky planets. It's not just that. There are so many other factors that lead to this extraordinary fine balance of life that after a while, you get so mathematically unlikely that the most likely explanation marries with not only intelligent design, but specifically intelligent design from a being that is represented in the Bible. Is that fair to say?
That is fair to say. I mean, all stars get brighter and brighter as they continue to fuse hydrogen into helium. Our sun today is about 23% brighter than it was when the first life appeared on planet Earth. But that requires tremendous fine-tuning, because you have to have just the right life on planet Earth at just the right time and just the right diversity and abundance in order that that life can be removing greenhouse gases from the atmosphere at exactly the right rate to compensate for the brightening of the sun, so the temperature in the surface of the Earth remains optimal for life. If you want advanced life, you need to have a long history, because advanced life needs a lot of biodeposits. It needs a just right abundance of quantities in the atmosphere, and that takes life being on the planet just the right time, just the right abundance. And I argue, only a mind that knows the future physics of the sun and the Earth and the moon would know which life needs to be on planet Earth at what time and at what abundance throughout its history. And look at the fossil record of life. Everything's exactly what you need it to be to compensate for the changing physics of the sun. Now, some evolutionary process is going to have no idea what's going on with the sun, and things will get out of sync.
Oh.
So the fact that everything's in perfect sync tells you there has to be an intelligent supernatural mind behind it all.
Oh, just linger on that for a moment. As we look at a biblical account of creation, it does blow me away. And I mention this almost every Tuesday, just in case there's somebody new who's watching that doesn't realize that the Bible is not just a book of theology, but you can argue that it's a book of science. Every book ever written that delves into science, Hugh, in even a small way, unless it's science fiction, talks about the science that they know is fact as in the day. The Bible speaks beyond what anybody knew, understood, comprehended, or even imagined at the time in many places. And so understanding all of this formation obviously didn't take God by surprise. And I've always wondered what your thoughts were on the biblical account of the earth being without form and void, as it mentions in Genesis, the first book of the Bible.
Well, Michelle, I was not raised in a Christian home. I got into science at a very tender age of 7, and I knew from the age of 8 onwards I was going to be an astrophysicist. That's just the way it was. But when I did finally pick up a Bible at age 17, what caught my attention is its predictive power. It was accurately predicting future scientific discoveries and future historical events. I spent 18 months saying, I wonder if the Bible ever gets it wrong. It never did. Everything was just exactly right. And it was making predictions thousands of years ahead of the science and the history of its time. I mean, that was a big factor in persuading me this book we call the Bible must be inspired by the one that created the universe. And that's what prompted me to sign my name in the back of a Gideon Bible, give my life to Jesus Christ, when I was an undergraduate physics student at the University of British Columbia.
It's a powerful, I almost wonder what it would be like to be a fly on the wall as you're reading through and those things. It's Twilight Zone. I mean, it's like, whoa, when you put all of the pieces together. And as we talk about the sun's anomalous rocky planets, as we talk about these, the balance, it really is astounding. But what, as we talked about the need for every planet, the gassy, the rocky, the way our sun is, all needed for the balance of life, are we seeing that there is purpose in exoplanets, in some of the other elements of the universe in the support of life on one single planet? Or conversely, is there a great likelihood that beyond the nearly 5,000 exoplanets that we know exist, we're going to find another Earth, another inhabitable planet, maybe at a different stage of development, maybe somewhere that we can eventually inhabit, or perhaps with life?
Well, I think there's going to come a time not too far in the future where we'll actually have millions of discovered planets. We know there's got to be billions in our galaxy alone. So just a matter of time before we find them all. However, what I've noticed is we've yet to find a star that has the right characteristics to make possible planet orbiting it, in which you got plants and animals and the equivalent of human beings. So it's like this quest to find a planet like Earth, it's much easier just to look at the stars. Stars are easy to measure. They're bright. And we've been able to measure billions of them in our galaxy. And yet, for 60 years, we astronomers have been searching for a twin of the sun. And we have found many stars that are twins of one another, but we've yet to find a twin of the sun. And this article you're referring to that I wrote is basically making the point. The sun stands out. It's got this very low lithium abundance, and it has this transfer of refractory elements. The fact that our rocky planets are unique tells us there's something special about the sun. And you're referring earlier to the first verses of the Bible, how it was formless and void. There was water over the whole face of the deep. And what we astronomers understand, Earth-like planets are going to have a huge amount of water. And yet here's Earth with a little bit of water. Now, there's ways a planet can lose all of its water. And so we do find rocky planets that are bone dry. And we find rocky planets that have got 500 times as much water as the Earth has.
Wow.
But the fact that we have a small amount of water, exactly the amount of water that advanced life needs, not so much water that you have no continents, not so much water that ice forms at the bottom of the ocean. And so, yeah, our solar system, our planet Earth is atypical. Our star is atypical. We now know that our galaxy is atypical. We see no other galaxy like our galaxy. And our galaxy cluster, we live in a unique galaxy cluster, so we don't see anything like it. And now we've got the technology to discern what a supercluster of galaxies is like. And as we look at these superclusters of galaxies, we live in the only one that would be make possible the existence of life and advanced life in particular. So the fact is, no matter what size scale we look at in the universe, we see that we're living in a unique system. And this base, and also this whole point, why all these other planets? Well, in order for one planet to exist on which life is possible, the universe needs to be a specified mass and a specified size and a specified age. So we literally need this universe of 50 billion trillion stars and 100 billion trillion planets in order for there to be one. All that exists so that we are here. And as a Christian, this tells me, God must care for us a great deal, that he didn't think it too expensive to actually create a universe of 100 billion planets and 50 billion trillion stars so we could have this place. The other thing that blows me away, our Earth not only can support advanced life, it can support billions of human beings living here at one time. I mean, I've been writing books making the point. It's one thing to have a planet on which you got maybe 100 human beings running around on it, but to have billions, a level of fine tuning to get up to the billions is orders of magnitude greater. But that tells me there is a God out there who wanted a universe in which billions of humans could live on one planet at one time. Why? Because he wanted to redeem billions of humans unto himself and design the universe to make that possible. So we're going to have a lot of friends in the new creation.
That is astounding. And as you're listening, do you feel pretty special today? An entire universe was handcrafted, it would seem, just for you, so that you can live and you can thrive. It's astounding. A quick question. You had mentioned that rocky planets can be bone dry. They can be rife with just coverage of water, and that there are just a few ways that that can dissipate so that we can have what we have here, just that right balance of water. I wanted to ask you how those things are, because I think this is a fascinating thing that plays into the larger narrative of the God story.
Well, we know that planet Earth began with an ocean that was thousands of miles deep. So we were born very water rich, but it was the merger between Theia and the proto-Earth that eliminated that water. And then the cometary bombardment we got thereafter gave us a thin layer of water, but we were in danger of losing all of that water because you got particles coming up from the sun that are basically working to eradicate the atmosphere and the water, assuming that you got a small amount of water. And what happened was we had the moon and the Earth close enough together that their tidal interaction could cause the liquid iron in their core to circulate. And that generated a magnetic field that protected us from the very harsh radiation of the early sun, basically preserved the small amount of water we had so that later we could actually have the oceans we need, the waters and streams and the water cycle we need. If it wasn't for the moon being that close, the moon being that big, being big enough and rich enough in refractory elements to have a liquid iron core and actually have them close enough that their tidal interaction could circulate the iron, there'd be no water on planet Earth today. There'd be no atmosphere on planet Earth today.
No beach, no beach during the summer, people. The beach is out. Hugh, as you're talking, I think my breath was literally taken away. I'm thinking to myself, the extraordinary level of engineering. As you're talking, it sounds like a machine. Well, you know, these pieces interacting in just the right way and the iron, the lithium, being able to circulate and tidal. That sounds like extraordinary engineering. It's mind-blowing. And I mentioned that I think this does indeed play into the larger narrative of a God story as we find out more about our universe. One, yeah, if you have a piece of engineering, you know, I have a microphone that you can see right here, engineering, it didn't just happen. It didn't just fall out of the sky and boom, there's a microphone that works. It's engineering. But the other thing has to do with water. Water being such an abundant and necessary means of life. Our body's made up of mostly water. This recycling factor of water. You know, we go through so much, Hugh, to make sure that we can recycle things on our planet. And we expend a lot of energy to do it sometimes. But yet, water, the same water that was here as Theia and what we know as Earth collided is still in circulation, and it helped make my coffee this morning. The recycling nature, the way that the Earth is set up is mind-boggling.
Yeah, we have exactly the right amount of water we need. You know, and people think, well, if you got water, that's going to be life. They don't realize the universe is soaking wet. Water is the third most abundant molecule in the universe, right after hydrogen 2 and hydrogen 3. And the miracle of planet Earth is we're not soaking wet. We have a thin layer of water, but we were able to keep that thin layer of water. Typically, if you got a thin layer of water on a planet, you're going to lose it because of the radiation from the host star. Things were set up here on planet Earth, so we actually kept that tiny amount of water that we wound up with. Just the right amount we need.
Well, I would say that we sound like we're a lonely planet and a lonely solar system if we are that unique, but it would also seem that the level of care, intricacy, even unbelievable beauty, which is completely unnecessary to the formation of a planet. Did it have to be so beautiful? The diversity of life, there's so much to what has brought together this universe. And the more we learn, the less we seem to know. It really does speak to a larger story. And it would seem, Hugh, that story is that there is a being that lovingly engineered this universe, this solar system, this planet for, it would seem, human life. And as you said, for that need for interaction, relationship, and even redemption.
Well, you know, as we astronomers look out beyond planet Earth and beyond our solar system, everywhere we look, we see extremely hostile conditions for life, and especially advanced life. And that's causing an emotion to ripple through the astronomical community. We're alone. And it's easy to get into that feeling of loneliness. But when you look at all the intricate designs that are necessary to make our existence possible here on Earth, that tells us we're not alone. Somebody out there did all the engineering, and somebody there must care for us a great deal. And we astronomers look out at the universe and realize it's eventually going to kill us. The sun's getting brighter and brighter. Our galaxy is going to merge with the Andromeda galaxy. We can't live here much longer, at least on an astronomical time scale. But when you look at this engineering design that makes our existence possible, you realize, no, there's someone out there that cares for us a great deal and cares for us enough. I don't have to worry about the sun getting too bright. He's going to take care of me. He's got a plan. And of course, you kind of see that as you look at all the physics and chemistry. Obviously, there's a planner out there, and he's got a very high purpose and a very high value for us human beings. We have an eternal destiny that goes beyond the existence of this universe.
And we can know that even through science to a degree. You've written about the multidimensional characteristics of God, the science of what we have here, something outside. We know through science that something outside of this universe had to exist in order to create this universe. This universe, in essence, is almost quarantined. We can all understand quarantined at this point. It's kind of quarantined, and it would seem that that extra dimension, extra dimensionality, speaks to something beyond this universe.
Yeah, it does. I like the word quarantine because it's something we're discovering. We're not going to be able to visit other stellar systems. We're not even going to be able to visit our nearby planets. We can with machines, but not with human bodies. We're beginning to realize just how extremely hostile conditions are once you get beyond the Earth. But that tells us, too, we live in a very special home. I mean, it's like living in a gigantic, gorgeous mansion in the middle of a deadly swamp. You don't dare go outside, but boy, life is sure beautiful inside.
It is indeed. Finally, what I really wanted to get to is how we've touched on how this speaks to the God story. And I mentioned that verse in Genesis, you know, the earth being, you know, the waters covered the earth was without form and void, and how we can say, wow, that really seems to be congruent with what we now know about the formations of planets, how earth was formed and the like. That's one reason why we see that if we're looking for a theory of how all of this came, what really happened in the beginning, that's one reason why we can look and say, well, the Bible seems to be the most likely explanation. But that's not the only reason. There are a lot of things that seem to work and interweave with biblical accounts that lead credence to the Bible as being the real source of what we can look to see what is truth. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, I told you earlier, I first was reading the Bible when I was 17. Right. And I'm old enough that was a time before plate tectonics was well established.
Okay.
Passage, there's water over the whole surface of the earth. And I said, that's not what my textbooks are saying. But I was aware of this emerging field of plate tectonics, and says, I wonder how this is going to play out. Uh-huh. And what has happened over the intervening decades, uh-huh, we've seen a greater and greater fit with what Genesis has been teaching about the history of the oceans, the history of the continents, and the history of life. I mean, that's kind of what got my attention. So I looked at the first page of the Bible and said, it seems to be describing everything in exactly the right terminology. Everything is in the right order. And yeah, there's some things here we don't know yet. I wonder how this is going to play out. Well, in the intervening years, everything has played out. In fact, just a couple of years ago, a discovery was made showing that indeed, what you see about creation day 4, the Earth's atmosphere begins with such great haze, creatures on the surface can see light, but they can't see the sun, moon, and stars. And as a group of physicists who did an experiment in the lab and said, let's just alter the chemistry, the oxygen content in Earth's atmosphere, the way we know it happened, and see what that does to the atmosphere. And they're able to prove it goes from extremely hazy to perfectly clear when you move the oxygen content from less than 1% up to 8%. And the clarity of the atmosphere, the appearance of animals, happened exactly at that time in the history of Earth. So that's something we just discovered a couple of years ago, but it basically makes the point. The more we learn about nature, the more evidence we see for the supernatural accuracy of everything the Bible states.
I have to ask this question. I know we're kind of running out of time, but how does that play into the water, the factor on the earth, play into the Noah account of, you know, suddenly for the first time on earth, it rains and such, and an entire flood of the earth?
Well, Genesis 2 uses a couple of different words that you see for rain, ed and matar. And so when it talks about how there was a mist over the Garden of Eden, it uses the word for tiny drops of water. And then when you see the flood in Genesis chapter 7, it's talking about rain, where it uses the Hebrew word for bigger drops of water.
Oh, Hugh, I'm from Seattle. I understand the difference in rain. Yeah, I got that rain thing down. Gotcha.
Well, I was raised in Vancouver, British
yeah,
Columbia.
So you know.
And if the raindrops were less than 3/16 of an inch in diameter, we called that a mist.
That's right.
And bigger than that, we called it a rain. So, but in both cases, you're going to get rainbows. It's still rain. So there was rain before Noah's flood. There was rain afterwards. There was rainbows before, rainbows afterwards. What's different is God said, that rainbow you've always been seeing, I'm now going to make that a sign. So he uses that as a covenant signature of a promise he made to humanity, that he wouldn't wipe out humanity with a flood ever again. But if you look at 2 Peter 2, verse 5, it says that the flood of Noah wiped out the world of ungodly people. It doesn't say it wiped out the whole planet. It says the world of ungodly people. And 2 Peter 3, verses 5 and 6, it says the world that existed at that time, basically contrasting the world of Noah with the world of Rome. Well, both worlds were only part of planet Earth, but it was basically God saying, you know, I'm going to wipe out everywhere they got evil human beings and the animals that are associated with them. But we know from genetic data that at that time, humans were localized. They weren't spread out yet. Because we actually had DNA evidence that shows this extremely rapid dispersion and colonization of humanity much after the first humans appear. And this is consistent with what you see in Genesis 10, where it talks about the spreading of the nations and how God scattered humanity over the whole face of the earth. And so I'm writing a book right now on Noah's flood, basically making the point, everything that the Bible says about the flood, and everything that the science says about the flood is consistent.
Hugh, I'm so jazzed. I'm excited. I was going to ask you what your next book is, because I'm no offense, but I'm getting tired of reading all the old ones and not having something new. Although you can't get tired. You learn.
I got a brand new one coming out early in 2022, and it's on cosmic interior designs. We're calling it Design to the Core.
Oh,
about the latest discoveries of how we see these amazing designs in our super galaxy cluster. And I mean, we end the book with what's going on in the core of the Earth. The Earth's core is unlike the core of any other planet, precisely designed to make our existence possible. But following that, I'm going to write a book on the flood.
This is really, it's really exciting. So I'm going to tell you, as you're listening, maybe, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, I went down to the headquarters of Reasons to Believe in California, and had a wonderful time with the scholars there. They provided a beautiful lunch, and it was just wonderful. I toured their beautiful facility. And then one of their folks took me to their bookstore and said, go ahead, pick something out. I was like a kid in a candy store. I mean, the books. And you can do this too when you go to reasons.org. You can be your own kid in a candy store and not even have to leave your home. The titles just jazzed me. The subject matter jazzed me, covering so many different things. It's something I can get excited about. And I'm very excited about the flood because you mentioned God allowing this just grand destruction, but yet there's the beautiful narrative that I wanted to end with is that he didn't just say, oh, I'm wiping those people out. You're out of here. He lingered. He had this boat built. He encouraged Noah to say, come on, let's go. You know, God doesn't just leave people to their own devices. And he isn't right now. If you feel that you are just lingering on this lonely planet, you are not alone. And God has you maybe listening to this broadcast for a reason, to realize that if the Bible's getting it right in the science department, maybe if you walk down the hall of the Bible, it's definitely getting it right in the theology department too. And there's something to be said about the person and the work of Jesus Christ. Just saying. And if you want to know more, you can contact me. We'll have a conversation. Bring your questions. Bring your heavy questions. Just the name of Hugh's organization, Come Let Us Reason, just speaks that God is one that says, I'm not afraid of questions. I'm not afraid of the discussion. So I want to encourage you to contact me at My Michelle Live, like us, share us, and visit reasonstobelieve.org. And don't you worry, I'm going to link everywhere you're listening to this. You'll see a link to this fabulous article that we were referencing. Dr. Hugh Ross, say hello to your team there. I love each and every one of them. They've become friends and like family to me. Thanks for doing what you're doing. God bless you. And thanks for being with us today.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
More SciTech Talk at MyMichelleLive.com.